ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
A confession. A memory. A lie. What if all three could be wrong? Forensic is a new series from All in the Mind, unpacking the hidden psychology of crime solving. Why innocent people confess? How memories can be rewritten? The science behind true crime. All in the Mind, Forensic. Search for All in the Mind on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Think back to the worst date that you've ever been on. Maybe they talked about themselves the whole time. You know the vibe. Enough about me. Let's talk about you. What do you think about me? Whatever made the date bad, I bet that you will find even worse on Bad Dates of Melbourne. It's a social media account dedicated to sharing the most appalling human dating behaviour, but it's also sparked something special, an unexpectedly wholesome community, and a new book by its founder, Alita Bryden, called How to Date Like a Dangerous Woman.
Think there is someone for everyone, and that's again why we have to be so comfortable by ourselves and independent and on our own, because you actually might not meet the special person, and it's really hard to come to terms with that you might not meet someone.
And that is the big idea being explored on today's show. Hello, I'm Natasha Mitchell. Welcome. Yes, ditch the date. Calling all singles or wannabe singles. What happens when you put self-love at the centre of single life? At the Brimbank Writers and Readers Festival at the Sunshine Library in Melbourne's West on Wurundjeri and Boonwurrung country, let's join Alita Bryden in conversation today with comedian, author, she's also host of the Single Life of Us and Dear Nelly podcasts, a regular on Life Matters here on ABC Radio National, Nelly Thomas, to find out.
Alita, I have so many questions, so little time.
Oh, I'm very excited.
Let's start. Can we go back to the beginning with Bad Dates of Melbourne, which is, like people say all the time, this thing's gone viral. This actually did go viral. So how did it start? How did you end up with 21 million views? What happened?
So I used to tell my bad date stories to all of my friends and family, like these juicy, wild stories. And I think if you've dated, you know the sort of stories that I'm talking about, like they're crazy. And I would tell them these stories and they were like, these stories are too good just to be told over drinks. Like there needs to be something more to this. There needs to be some sort of project or something attached to them. And one day I was sitting on the couch just by myself and I thought, you know what? Bad date stories are fun, they're bite-sized, they're entertaining, they're actually really good for social media.
Yeah.
So in the moment, I just thought, I didn't think anything actually. I just got out my phone, started up the Facebook page, Bad Dates of Melbourne, and made a commitment that every day for 1 year, I would post something every day, whether that was a story or a meme or an observation. And I think about 10 days in, one of the posts went viral and it was seen by something like 1.6 million people.
Wow.
And I remember sitting at work and my phone was just going like bing, 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 bing. And it's like very exciting to see something that you've created in your pajamas at home being seen by like millions of people.
Yeah.
And it's like social media is addictive, but it was addictive. It was a rush. So after that, I just dove straight in and got into it. And I think I went about 5 years without missing a day of posting. I do take days off now, but I'm very committed to it.
So why do you think bad date stories in particular resonate with your audience, well, a very big audience, resonate with people in general?
They kind of have everything. Like they can be full of love, full of heartbreak, full of sadness. They can be funny, they can be gross, they can be wild. They kind of have a little bit of everything. And for social media, it doesn't hurt when something's a little controversial.
Mm-hmm.
So bad behavior can go quite well on social media. Not that I endorse bad behavior, but for a post it does seem to work.
Yeah.
But bad date stories are juicy. And
yes.
I think if you've dated in the modern world or swiped on the apps, you've probably been on like one of these bad dates. You've probably been there, done that. So it's quite validating to see these stories on social media and be like, ah, like that happened to me, or I had an experience similar to that. Mm-hmm. Like it makes you feel seen. And then reading all of the comments, you go, well, other people relate to this as well. Mm-hmm. So it really is viral content.
Absolutely. I think that's the key. Is just by, for people listening on the radio, we have a live audience here. By show of hands, who's been on a bad date? Yeah, pretty
all
much. Almost everyone. I think what your page has done, and now your fabulous book that we'll get into, is when you go on a bad date, you do it in isolation.
Mm.
Right? So the people, especially if you're of my vintage, you're a bit younger than me, but most people my age aren't dating. So your friends can't necessarily relate to the experience you've been through, whereas seeing you write bad date stories and then, as you said, your fabulous community also going, oh, that happened to me too, it just allows you that breathing space to kind of go, oh, okay, not normalise it, but I'm not the outlier.
You're not alone. Yeah. So the probably one of the most common comments I get in the inbox on the page is, I felt alone before this page, but yes, now I know I'm surrounded by this community of people who are also going through what I'm going through. And when you date, you really do go through it. Like, it's tough. It's really tough out there. I think people underestimate that. It's really hard.
Absolutely. And I think for me, the key message of your book, and it's so accessible and beautifully written, by the way, like, has anyone read the book yet? Yeah, of course you have. Sisters read the book. It's just so relatable and such a beautiful read. One of the key messages that I took away from it is the idea that whether you're dating, single, in a relationship, whatever status, looking, not looking, the best thing you can do is work on yourself.
Oh, absolutely. Like, your relationship with yourself, that's the core. Mm. That's the one that lasts forever. So being independent and being able to entertain yourself, enjoy your own company, being financially independent, this is what it's all about. Like, this is the most important relationship you have. And I think that so often, especially in pop culture and society, we're always focused on finding the one or going on dates and having that romantic excitement. And that's awesome. I mean, like, I've got a career around the romantic excitement, right? But the real relationship, the most important one, is the one you have with yourself, which sounds cheesy, but it's so true.
It is true. And I think it comes back to that feeling of isolation, that work, that internal work can feel very lonely.
Mm.
You know, the idea of, especially if you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, whatever age, if you're like, oh, I need to do some work on myself, that feels like something you should have done in your 20s. It's not. You can do it at any age. But to have a community around you and a fearless leader, it means it can give you the courage to kind of go, oh, I'm not the only one who struggles with body image, or I'm not the only one who struggles with my self-esteem, or whatever it is, insert vulnerable topic here. It's very validating.
Yeah, and I think for the submitters as well. So you submit a story to me in the inbox and I read it and I post it. And when you see strangers validating your experience in the comments, like, it's one thing to have family and friends say, I'm so sorry that happened, you know, I understand. But when you've got complete strangers who you've got no interaction with, who know nothing about you, when they look at your story and they say, I feel for you, I understand you, I'm sorry, that is so validating. Yes. And so important, especially if you're trying to recover from a bad date or a bad experience. So it really is a wonderful community. And I know that it's my community and I've created it, but the people at Bad Dates of Melbourne are so nice. Like, I don't think there's anywhere else on the internet like it. Mm. People on Bad Dates of Melbourne are wholesome, they're supportive, they're friendly, they're funny. There's probably heaps of them in the room with us today who I'm loving.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's just a really wonderful place.
Well, they're looking to lift each other up, which is what the promise of social media was.
Mm.
It hasn't turned out to be like that. It's, to me, it's like the difference between watching, oh, I'm going to reveal far too much myself here, but watching like First Dates, which to me is like wholesome and lovely, and compared to Married at First Sight, where you're like, I need a shower, you know, like I need a pint of clean enema after that. Like, your page is First Dates, where you go, yeah, you get all the vulnerability and experience. Some people do the wrong thing, but it's always picked up.
Well, Bad Dates of Melbourne is very well moderated by myself. I'll give myself props for that. It is tightly moderated, and I don't accept bad behaviour, and I don't accept name calling. I don't accept any of it, and there's one strike and you're out. And I think on social media, a lot of the time, the moderators will think, oh, you know, free speech, everyone's got to have free speech, let people say their say. And, well, no, because this is a safe space for a lot of people, and I want it to be friendly, so you need to act friendly or you're not welcome.
Also, free speech, you can say whatever you want, but you can't say it on my page.
No, I'm like the dictator here, yeah. Dictator of Bad Dates of Melbourne.
Start your own page, write your own books, huh?
Exactly, yes. Exactly.
So how do we get from this, like, social media phenomenon, I'm sure everyone here knows about it, but people do, you post bad date stories, you comment on them, people ask for advice. I particularly appreciate the gaslighting stuff because I think if you've ever been gaslit, you need validation because you literally don't know what's going on. All of that's amazing. How do we get from that to this fabulous book? Your first book?
Yes, my first book.
Congratulations.
Well, the lessons of Bad Dates of Melbourne, they are so important. But they're kind of a little bit too in-depth just for social media. So you see on Bad Dates of Melbourne, I put together posts where I talk about my viewpoint and, you know, what I think is important and about body image and self-esteem and all of that stuff. But you're limited, well, not limited, but like for social media, you stick to probably about 300 words or something. So a book was a chance to take that content and tell it in a bit of a longer form. And the stuff that we learn on Bad Dates of Melbourne is so interesting. Like, mostly women who write in, but all people who write in, they have something to say, it's important, it's timely, it's valuable. So to be able to put all of that into a book was really exciting, really exciting. And I thought it was important for us to share that information as well.
Well, and I think I've had the pleasure of being able to read it, not everyone else has. I think what you've done really well is condense a lot of stories and then given it back to us thematically. Like, rather than kind of chronologically this happened, then this happened, or this person went on this date, it's like, this is how we deal with boundaries. This is how we deal with self-esteem. This is how we do, and that is really valuable, I think, for people who are in the dating wild.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it is a dating book, but it's also kind of not a dating book because a lot of the focus is on dating and how to meet people and how to swipe on the apps and the terminology and all of that sort of stuff. But a lot of it is about, and again, I know this sounds cheesy, falling in love with yourself and being independent and that being the most important relationship. So there's a lot in there, I think, for people who even aren't going into the dating world. It's just kind of that dating is the kind of theme that ties it all together.
Yeah, agreed. I think in the best possible way, it's a self-help book.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
it is about
your self-love. And then you date if you want to date, and many people don't. If you want to date, you date from a position of more power.
And that's the thing. Like, a lot of people will read this book, and even though it's a dating book, you might say to yourself, you know what, I don't want to date. I'm happy on my own. And in a kind of funny way, that is great dating advice. Like, it's good dating sometimes not to date. Mm. Like, some people will genuinely be happy on their own, and they're enough. They don't want to go out and find another person. That's totally valid.
Oh, well,
totally,
and we both know some people are not happy on their own but shouldn't be dating.
Exactly.
How many times do you see your stories and you go, just get out, bro. Just get out of the game. Get a hobby. He's not a lady. Can I quote you back to you?
You can.
My name is Alita, and I'm a reformed shy girl, dating addict and diet tragic. I was never any good with money, found myself politely nodding along when men spoke and was super embarrassed by my belly. In my 20s, I was looking for a love that would make me feel whole.
I was. That was me in my 20s. I was very focused on romantic love and finding the love, finding the one. And I think for many women, like, that's the focus. And why wouldn't it be? Because that's what we've been brought up to think is the most important thing. But I think I knew, like, in my heart of hearts, like, really deep down, like the little girl inside, I knew that it wasn't the most important thing. And, like, I appreciated my independence, and I kind of like being on my own as well. It's funny because, like, I'm single and I'm very happy being on my own, but dating is fun. But it's interesting that a single person can write a dating book.
Oh, I think you're the best person to write a dating book because you're dating.
Exactly.
You know, Yeah,
but you know, I'm not dating as much as I used to, though, because the focus is now not on dating. The focus is on me. So I do go on dates occasionally, but, you know, mostly I'm happy on my own.
But, babe, your dating was a full-time job from what I've read.
Ah. Like, my dating...
You run out of effort. You run out of energy at some point, don't you?
Dating in my 20s, I remember some days I would go on multiple dates on a day. Like, I was hardcore. Yeah.
How many dates, what's your maximum that you've been on in one day?
Honestly, I can remember two. If you told me it was three, I wouldn't be surprised. But the thing is, you've got to do your hair and makeup. So if you can do it once and you can schedule in three guys, morning, afternoon, evening, then it's a lot easier, right? You only have to do your hair once.
Mate, single. We got any single parents in? You've got to have three dates in the one day or it'll be another month before you go on another date. So you're in your 20s, that's how you describe. You're shy, you've got some body stuff, don't we all? You're dating a lot, you're looking for the one. You're still in the kind of romantic narrative. Two parts of this question. I'm assuming you are now a dangerous woman.
I'd like to think so.
What is, for the audience who haven't had the chance to read the book, what is a dangerous woman?
A dangerous woman is this, like, badass babe. She's independent. She doesn't take rubbish from anyone. She knows she's enough on her own. She's financially secure. And she's just, like, a strong, independent person. And she might date. Maybe she doesn't date. But she's happy on her own. She's comfortable with her own company.
Mm. So she's in charge, essentially.
She's in charge,
of her own
yeah.
destiny.
She's in charge of her own destiny.
Yeah.
A dangerous woman. That's author and creator of the viral social media account Bad Dates of Melbourne, Alita Bryden, on putting yourself first when it comes to putting yourself out there on the dating scene. Coming to you from the Brimbank Writers and Readers Festival today on Big Ideas here on ABC Radio National and ABC Listen. Find us wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Natasha Mitchell. Look, when it comes to dating today, there might be apps. There's a whole lot of new terms to get your head around, like gaslighting, ghosting, catfishing. But have things really changed so much? Author, podcaster and comedian Nellie Thomas is here with Alita.
What are the worst aspects of modern dating? I can see from our questions, a lot of people have questions about how the apps have affected it. I mean, we're in so-called post-porn culture. We're in, you know, there's a whole range of huge cultural shifts that have happened in the last 20 and 30 years. What's the downside of those? And then we'll go to the upside.
You know, I don't necessarily think the problems that we're facing these days are modern dating. I feel like the problems that we see in dating have been going on for a very long time. And a lot of it bubbles down to disrespect. It is just the callousness with which people can treat other people. It's quite disheartening. And it's funny because romance can be wonderful and lovely and dating can be really exciting, but there's also this element to it which is quite awful.
Best of times, worst of times.
Yeah.
Can I pick up on that? I totally agree with you about, I think it's overblown, the negatives, because people talk even on safety, disrespect, patriarchy, all the things that are all still there. You know, I'm 52. They were there when I was dating in my teens and 20s. It was just at the pub and not on an app.
Yeah, and we weren't speaking about it on social media.
Yeah.
And I think there was a sense of shame as well with the older generations, that, you know, you had this bad stuff that happened to you and you felt it was just you and you didn't want to tell anyone. But that shame is kind of shedding these days and people are a lot more comfortable talking about things when they go wrong.
Yeah, and you can hear other people share their experiences. What do you think, are there any positives that the cultural changes that we've gone through in the last few decades?
Well, people are still falling in love, which is lovely.
Yes.
And with dating apps, like, as we were saying before, I was very shy growing up. So dating apps were this opportunity for me to go and meet men in this environment where I was much more comfortable in my pyjamas at home.
Yep.
So, I know, this is very funny.
So you're not doing, like, small talk at a bar with a cocktail.
No.
You're actually in your safe space.
No, and I look, I was a little boy crazy, and to a degree I still
really?
Am. Still, oh, yeah, of course.
You?
Yes, me. But, yeah, dating apps were an opportunity for me to meet men in the comfort of my own home, not in a shady way, but in the comfort of my home in my pyjamas. So it's exciting to be able to meet people that aren't in your immediate space. Like, I never had a boyfriend at high school or anything, so the fact that I could meet men using an app on my phone, like, that's exciting. Yeah. And I think dating apps, like, they get a lot of flack, but people really do find love on dating apps. They find forever love on dating apps, and I think sometimes we overlook that. They can be great. Yeah. They can be really great.
Totally agree. So in terms of the comfort, because I think for a lot of people, whether they're shy, whether they're going through a hard time, they're neurodivergent, like a whole range of things, they are really positive because you can have these sort of interactions without the pressure of someone standing in front of you. And I wonder how you feel about seeing deal breakers. You know, for example, the classic, you can't do half a kid, right? Like if you want kids and I don't want kids, you can't compromise on that. So you may as well swipe left.
I think you should swipe left. And the thing is with deal breakers, I think women in particular, we ignore them and we make excuses for them. And
Dangerous
women don't.
No.
We ignore, a lot of the time women ignore them and they overlook them and they say, oh, but I really like him. You have to act on deal breakers as soon as you see them, because once you get further in and you're in like or in love, it becomes really hard to get out when there's a deal breaker. So trust your gut and go with it. If there's a deal breaker, act on it. You're not obliged to be in that relationship. Act on it, get out if you need to get out, and stand by what's true to you.
And you're not employing someone, right? You're allowed to have deal breakers that you wouldn't apply anywhere else. You're allowed to go, no, you're not in the right age range.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or you have kids and I don't want them, or vice versa, or whatever it is.
There's no shame in that as well. I mean, you can say I don't want to date anyone in cargo pants, and that's completely appropriate. It's up to you what your deal breakers should be.
All right, we found your line. Okay, interesting. Let me put this one to you, because I think the older I have gotten, I wouldn't say they're deal breakers, but they're things where I think they're far more important than I ever thought when I was younger. A classic example for me would be someone who is moody. I would have thought, oh, I can work with that. Like, I'm pretty good natured. Like, I'll be in a good mood. Doesn't matter if they are. Now I'm like, hard no. I don't want to be around like negativity or frustration or whatever 24/7. Have you got an example of that where a deal breaker, let's call it that, has shifted for you as you've gotten more self-esteem, older, whatever?
I think when I was younger, I was very tolerant of people who didn't give back, so to speak.
Oh, no reciprocity.
No reciprocity.
Yes.
And I would send text messages and maybe I'd hear a few days later.
Yeah.
And there was no enthusiasm there. Mm. Enthusiasm is very important for me now. I remember my best friend said to me, like a number of years back, she's like, enthusiasm is the most important thing.
Yeah.
Because you want someone to really show up and really be excited about getting to know you and who you are. Mm. Whereas when I was younger, you kind of just take what you can get, which is a bit depressing. But now when you're dating, like, you really want someone to show up for you and get excited about you, because without that, I mean, you're going to be doing all the work yourself.
100%. So once you recognize, and again, this is something I think that you do really well on the page and in the book, that there's a cultural narrative that actually quite literally trains you to accept less.
Yeah.
Right? Well, yeah. He or she texted you, well, it was only 3 days. We know 3 days, it's too long.
I know.
If you're enthusiastic, your bloody thumbs are, you've got RSI, right? So you're looking for, you want enthusiastic consent, respect, and joy.
Absolutely. Enthusiastic joy. I like
enthusiastic joy or nothing.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Why not?
Love
because
it.
If you're comfortable on your own, you know, that's enough. You don't need to go for second best.
This is a bit of a harder question. We probably don't have enough time to even get into it, but I'm going to ask you. One of the things I find really hard in this space, like particularly as an older feminist, is how we disentangle social structures, cultural pressures, all of which are very real, from your own individual responsibility. So let's say you keep getting in relationships where they're one-sided.
Yes.
Right? And you keep getting in relationships where you're chasing, essentially, and they're kind of half in interested. You can see all the cultural and structural reasons why women do that in particular. But there is also a point, I think, at which you have to sit back and go, well, I am the only one who can stop this. Mm. I am the only one. Like, the culture's not going to change before my next date.
Mm.
So I have to actually stop accepting this and ask something different from myself.
Yeah.
It can veer into victim blaming, you know, to kind of go, why do you keep repeating this pattern? So it's an issue I find difficult.
You have to be very patient with yourself.
Yeah.
Because you are working against this massive cultural framework that's putting pressure on you to just go with the flow. I mean, so much of dating is women being told to go with the flow, just go along with it. And, like, I think we're all a little bit sick of that.
Yeah.
So there is an element of taking responsibility for your own behaviour, but you also have to be really gentle with yourself because you're working against this massive thing.
Mm. I think if you, and again, this is something you have created for all of us if we don't have this, if you've got a good group of friends, they will gut check you on that stuff.
Mm.
You know, I'm sure all of us have had the friends of like, that bar's too low.
Yeah.
Like, oh, what, they texted you back and now you want to get married. No, like, that bar's too low, right? There needs to be enthusiasm, all the stuff you're talking about. The way I would talk to you if you asked me, I need to talk to myself. So having that kind of collective little, I call it a coven, it could be mixed gender, but having a group of people who will pull you up and go, call your jets.
Yeah, and they're the most important relationships. Like, yeah. I look back at the guys that I've dated and they've come and they've gone. Like, I'm not in the relationship at the moment, but my friends have been solid there since day one. They're so reliable. They're so kind. They're so generous. I love my sisters who's waving at me. They're my most important relationships. So the men in my life, like, I've enjoyed their company, but they're not really what it's all about.
Yeah. I know there'll be people in the audience, especially listening, but in the live audience who want some like practical advice. So you give really good advice in the book about online dating profiles, which seems to be, you know, the most, what are we at now? Something like 70% of relationships start from.
It's huge now.
Mm. So, I mean, there's some terrible profiles. Let's ignore those. What are good profiles?
A good profile is one in which you really show who you are. So maybe in your photos, you're doing activities that you enjoy. In your bio, you're talking about great travel you've done. So whoever you are, your profile really has to speak to that. Because there's lots of people on dating apps, it's very competitive, but it shouldn't be about what, like if you're a straight woman, it shouldn't be about what men are looking for. It should be about who you are. And I think that's what's most important. And, of course, there's other tips like, you know, make sure your photos are good and, you know, put your best foot forward.
More than one.
Yes, more than one photo. And when you talk to someone, have a look through their profile to see what's, you know, a good icebreaker. Don't just say hi, hello or hey.
Yeah.
So there's a fair few tips there. But if you...
Hey. Hey again.
Hey, hi, hello, hey.
How are you?
Good.
So that, I think that one's critical, right? Actually, because if, I guess, some people are window shopping. Like when people say to me, why aren't I getting matches? I'm like, plenty of people are just having a look. They have no intention of meeting up. Don't take that personally.
Like, it's an ego boost for a lot of people.
They're probably married, they're having a look, or they're single and they have no intention of dating.
A lot of married people on dating apps.
A lot. Mm. But if you are genuinely dating, then read the friggin' profile and mention it, right? So that you know, like let's say you and I match, that I know what was in your profile. I need to demonstrate that rather than I'm just swiping, I'm going yes to everybody and seeing who bites.
Yeah, and we should expect that.
Yes.
But a lot of the time, like especially these straight men, they swipe through the apps and they're looking at each match for literally 1 second. It's all about the photo, but
blonde.
Well, we want someone to get to know us.
Yes.
And like we should expect more. Mm. And like if it's either expecting more or being on your own. I think maybe be on your own if they're not living up to that.
If they're not going to put in effort at that stage, how much effort do you think they're putting in 2 years down the track?
No, this is them putting their best foot forward.
That's right.
You deserve more.
And I love your advice as well about don't overthink how you present yourself, but present yourself. regardless of whether that is popular or not. If you're a gamer who likes hanging out in their tracksuit, say that, and then I'll know if you're for me or not. Mm. We won't waste each other's time. I won't hurt your feelings, vice versa.
Otherwise, you'll end up in a relationship. They'll be in a relationship with a person who's not you, and you need to be comfortable. You need to be yourself.
And also, then you've got to go on crap dates, right? I put in my, this is one for any of the queer ladies listening, I put in my profile, absolutely no lesbian hiking, right? Because I am not going on another date where I've got to walk up a hill. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't care how hot you are, this is not happening. So, like, lead with that. And it's also very funny, thank you very much. Lead with that because I don't want to waste your time. If you're a hiker, you're not for me, guys.
Hike is a deal breaker for me as well.
I'm not
hiking. No, you're not hiking for anyone.
I can't tell. It's a scourge on the lesbian community. But anyway. What is your idea of a great date?
Oh, you know, it's interesting because more than a few years back now, I went on this amazing date with this guy and he was so personable and friendly. And at the end of the date, I kind of looked back and I'm like, I'm actually not attracted to this guy, but such a great date.
Yeah.
And you know what it was? It's so basic, but he was asking me questions about my life and he was genuinely interested in who I was. I know, but that's the thing. Like so many dates out there, they don't make that effort for you. So when you meet someone who genuinely cares about you, is interested in getting to know you, I mean, it's nice. He's present and he was genuine and enthusiastic and cares. I mean, that's what we really want. And I mean, it does sound very like basic, but it's not happening.
Oh, I know. I think one of the biggest gifts of both your page and the book is to remind us to go back to basics because we overcomplicate everything. There's so much dating advice on Instagram. There's so many TV shows. There's all the things. And we get caught up in, oh, should the flowers be from the servo or from the... It's not about the flowers, right? If someone is present with you, is enthusiastic, is interested, that's the jackpot.
I think with dating advice, it's interesting because a lot of the time we think of it as strategic, like, you know, they've sent me a text yesterday, like how many hours should I wait before I text back? But a lot of dating is about identity. So when you have like strong self-esteem, when you feel good about yourself, when you've got a positive body image, when all of that is in gear, the dating stuff just naturally falls into place.
Going back to being asked questions, because that is probably the most common complaint I hear from women who are dating men, that they don't show interest or don't ask, that it's a very one-sided conversation, which leads me to, there's a lot of heteropessimism, right? There's a lot of women who, and I'm not saying it's wrong, but who think that there are no good men out there. What's your view on that?
I think there are good men out there. Whether there are enough for there to be one for every good woman, I'm not so sure. And why would there be? Because we live in a society where, well, we live in a patriarchy, essentially. Mm. So why would there be one good man for every good woman? And I think that's really a tough thing to deal with when you're dating, because so many people will say, oh, there's someone for you, keep trying, keep working at it. But I don't necessarily think there is someone for everyone. And that's, again, why we have to be so comfortable by ourselves and independent and on our own, because you actually might not meet the special person. And it's really hard to come to terms with that you might not meet someone. But, yeah.
I think this is the most radical part of your book, and the best part is actually telling the truth about that. Like all of this, like Christmas lunch, you know, your best friend's friend's auntie or whatever. Oh, you know, it'll happen when you least expect it. For every lid, there is a pot, you know, all of the things. There just isn't.
No.
So at the end of the day, you're better off going, as you advise, work on yourself. And if someone else comes into that picture, great. And if they don't, you're still great.
Yeah, I can offer all the greatest dating advice in the world. I can talk to you about what to put on your profile, what questions to ask, all of that stuff. But at the end of the day, you just might not meet somebody. And that's no reflection on you. It doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. It just means that it's a numbers game. We don't all have someone for us.
And it might be right person, wrong time, all of those
absolutely.
Things.
Absolutely. There's a lot going into it. And it doesn't mean that you're not an amazing, fabulous person. It just means that that's just the way the world has worked out.
Big statement on the state of love from Alita Bryden, author of How to Date Like a Dangerous Woman and founder of The Bad Dates of Melbourne. Your thoughts? Email us anytime, bigideas@abc.net.au. We love hearing from you. You're at the Brimbank Writers and Readers Festival in Melbourne's West today. Also with host podcaster Nellie Thomas, exploring questions from the Bad Dates of Melbourne community.
All right, I'm going to give you some questions from the audience. Okay. Do you find your older followers, how old, your older followers find it harder to date successfully?
I don't actually. And I think it's because the older you are, the more you know yourself and the stricter you are with your deal breakers. Like you don't put up with bad behaviour like you did when you were younger. So there are less people dating if you're older, but you date in a better way, I think. You date in a stronger way.
Right. Mm. Yeah. And I think especially for women who are older, I think you take less responsibility for other people's feelings, which doesn't mean that you aren't polite and all those sorts of things, but you're not managing grown adults' feelings.
And a lot of it as well, like marriage and children, all of the pressure is off. A lot of the time it's been there, done that. I want something for me. I want someone who's enthusiastic for me and meets my needs.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's your turn. Mm. Yeah. This is a great question. What are some ways to set firm boundaries that others will respect?
I think with boundaries is you need to think about them before you need to use them.
Yes.
So before you go on any date, sit down and figure out what's most important to you. You could even write it down, think about it, and you can even practice it in situations that are less high pressure than you might see on a date. So in the book, I talk about setting boundaries and I talk about going to get a massage, right? So when you go get a massage, you should start giving direction to the person giving you the massage. So a little bit softer, a little bit firmer. Please put a pillow behind my neck. Can you do this? Can you not do this? And you become more confident in verbalizing what you want. So when it comes to having the date, you are more confident in speaking up for yourself.
Who's going to admit by a show of hands in the audience that if they're getting a massage, they find it hard to do that? Yeah. That in itself, I think, is a really interesting thing to consider. And that's what I mean about going back to basics. To say to someone who's touching you literally, can you do that differently, is something that a lot of us find really hard to do.
Yeah, and I've done it before when I was younger, laid there in a massage, my boobs are killing me because I'm not laying properly on them and, they're going too hard and it's a little uncomfortable. And so many times I would just sit there and cop it. This is a massage, I'm meant to be enjoying this. Mm. So if you can speak up for yourself in the massage situation and work on that, then when you're in the dating situation, it becomes a lot easier to speak up for yourself.
Absolutely.
It's a good excuse to get a massage as well.
Yes, yes, multiple. So in terms of, because I think that's really great advice to think about it before you're in the situation, because being in the situation, you can get deer in the headlights, right, if someone does something that you don't like. I wonder if it's worth sitting down with your friends or whoever it is, or yourself even, and just making a list. If they do this, I will do this.
Oh, absolutely.
Can you give me a couple of examples of what boundaries you would apply on a date? If they are rude to the waitstaff, I will leave, whatever it is.
I think a big one is if they neg you. So negging is when somebody gives you an alleged compliment, but it's actually a dig at you. Mm. So they might say, I don't normally date big girls, but I've made an exception for you.
Yeah.
And you're is that a compliment or are they putting
you
down?
I don't usually find women funny.
No.
Don't you?
I've had that as well.
Oh, I've had that multiple times.
I don't like female comedians, but you're okay, I guess. But excuse me. Yeah. So whenever I hear a neg or an insult wrapped up in a compliment, I don't wait around or make an excuse for it. That's my sign to get out.
It's a test.
It is a test.
Right? They're testing your how much you will take. I'm trying not to swear.
What they can get away with.
What they can get away with. And I agree. Like, you do not... You're putting your best foot forward on a first date. Mm. You start critiquing someone else wrapped up in the guise of a compliment. Not only are you being negged, you're being gaslit.
A lot of dating is about power. Yeah. And it's a power move. It's putting themselves above you and making you feel small and them feel big. It's a power move.
Oh, you're an author, are you? You can make a living out of that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Can you give me another example? Because I think particularly women, it's hard. We're all generalising about gender, I get it. But a lot of women, we have been socialised to just absorb that stuff. Oh, they didn't mean it. They didn't mean it like that, like they're only joking. Can you give me another couple of, like, specific examples of negging or a boundary where you'd go, I'm out?
Probably showing up late is one.
Oh, how late?
Look, I think showing up 15 minutes late, not the end of the world.
Yeah.
But if they're showing up late to the extent that they don't care about your time,
yes,
that's probably where I would draw the line. I remember being in my 20s and I went on a date with this guy and he said, I'm going to be 20 minutes late. And I said, oh, okay, 20 minutes late, I'm happy to wait. I've done my hair, I've got ready, I can wait 20 minutes. And then he messaged again. He said, oh, I'm actually going to be another 15 minutes. And I thought, oh, well, that's only 15 minutes away. I suppose I've been waiting. Then he said, it'd be another 15 minutes. And at that point, it had been an hour.
Oh,
and I felt stuck and I wasn't sure what to do because I thought I've invested all of this time. I'm here. But at the same time, it's so disrespectful. But when I was younger, I waited and I went on the date and I wouldn't go on the date anymore. Mm. So I figure now you've got 15 minutes or you've got to have a really good excuse or I'm just not waiting for you.
Yeah, I
mean,
it's
so basic, isn't it? Like, no one should be waiting an hour to go on a date, but we do it.
And we've got a question about this. It's the same to a bigger scale in terms of how do I know when to leave a long-term relationship? You've invested in it.
Mm.
You've invested in that person. You've invested in the relationship. You've invested in the life. So you've got things holding you there in the same way as you go, well, I've done my hair, I've done my makeup, I've come into the city. You know, I've waited half an hour already. I might as well wait another half hour. The great gift of getting older is cut your losses and get out at the half hour.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this mythology that dating when you're younger is the most fun, that's the complete opposite of my experience. I don't know about you. I'd much rather date at this age than when I was 20.
Oh, I would much rather date at my age than I was in my 20s. I look back and I put up with so much.
Yeah.
I put up with so much and I just don't do that anymore.
Let's say you're on a date, you're out on a dinner date, because I know, and we all know this one, it's a basic one, but the guy's rude to someone or, like, rude to the waitstaff, mean to someone at the next table, whatever. Do you tell him? Do you go, I'm going to leave the date now because I didn't like how you spoke to the waiter, or do you make a polite excuse and leave?
It depends, I think. It depends on how safe you feel, whether you think they're going to arc up, whether you think they're actually going to listen to you in the first place. If somebody just suddenly had a headache and slipped out of the date, I wouldn't blame them for that because you really need to put yourself first. And we're not there to teach lessons to people. Like, I think
you're not Oprah.
I'm not Oprah.
You're allowed to just go.
You're allowed to leave. Yeah. And we're here to have fun. We're not here for me to teach you good manners. And I think it's quite... I think a lot of the time people say, oh, well, how will they know? How will they know they've done something rude if you don't tell them? Well, firstly, it's not my responsibility to tell them. Mm. And secondly, I think if you're of adult age and you've been rude on a date... We all know not to be rude. We all know what being rude, like we're taught in kindergarten what good manners are. So it's not your job.
We also know how, bless you, but how a 50-year-old dude responds to being told he's rude.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not ideal.
No, it's not ideal.
So you're putting yourself in a position where you're either going to be a therapist or worse, like it may literally not be safe. I agree. Just lie.
Yeah, just lie. I mean,
oh, I've got a migraine. Sorry.
Oh, love to have a migraine on a date.
Love
if you get
a
stuck.
Migraine.
You don't have to be honest if you really need to leave a date. I think people get caught up in this idea that if you're really uncomfortable on this date, you have to tell the truth. But you don't have to tell the truth. You can have a migraine and slip out. You can have a meeting that you've forgotten about I've forgotten about and you need to show up to.
Yeah.
You don't need to tell the truth, which,
you can
which
have
is
a
controversial.
Made up child calling you with a sore throat.
You could. And on Bad Dates of Melbourne, I've recommended before that if you need to leave a date, you can have a headache and leave. And the response from some men is like, oh my gosh, you can't. You've got to be honest. How dare you not tell the truth? Mm. But I don't think they understand what happens when you do tell the truth.
Well, a good girl, in the cultural sense, a good girl tells the truth and then manages your feelings.
Yeah.
Right? A dangerous woman goes, I want to leave now.
Yeah, and she leaves.
And she leaves. Yeah. You have permission officially from a leader to do that.
Yes, please leave.
I want to circle back because it's a question that's come up in a few of the questions. I'm going to condense them because we won't get to all of them. Essentially, on both a date and in a relationship, how do you know when it's time to give up?
That is a really tough
it's
question.
It's a big one, isn't it? Let's start with a date. How do you know it's time to leave the date?
I think when the questions stop flowing, when you start feeling uncomfortable, and when you just don't want to be there anymore.
Yeah.
When you just don't want to be there, that's enough. You don't have to push through.
So back to basics, how does your nervous system feel?
Exactly, exactly. If you'd rather be at home in your pajamas, make it happen.
Yeah. All right, long-term relationship harder. So let's say you've been 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, and it hasn't been good for however long. How do you know when to, because what's the advice you get? You got to go to couples therapy, you know, the grass is greener where you water it. Like there's so many cultural messages telling you to stay. When do you know, how do you know when to go?
That is a really good question. I think you need to think about whether you would be happier on your own or with this person. And I think a lot of the time you may feel happier on your own, or you might just want space.
Yeah.
Like when you start feeling like you need to have more space, I think that that's a real sign.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think when you've got that feeling, the way that I would put it, when you're feeling claustrophobic.
Yeah, yeah.
And like you can't breathe.
Yeah.
Not an ideal sign.
Yeah.
But also I think, and you say this in the book as well, think of the person you love the most in the world, like my 18-year-old daughter, could be your best friend, could be whoever. Would you want them in that relationship? Because I think we've got an idea that a relationship has to be terrible to leave it, right? It's particularly if it's a long-term relationship. It doesn't have to be terrible. It has to be not for you.
Yeah, and just being by yourself, if that's a little bit better, that's enough.
Yeah.
You don't need to be in a relationship ever.
Radical. Radical feminist agenda. That was a joke. No one laughed. Kind of is radical though. Has dating apps, do you think, have they made us better at dating?
They've made us worse at dating.
They've made us worse. How so?
I think there's a whole generation who doesn't know how to find a date in the real world. Because why would they? When you go to a club on a Saturday or Friday night, everyone's looking at their phones.
Yeah.
And if you want to find a date, you don't have to find a date that night. You can just go home and find one in your pajamas.
Mm.
So,
or you can find one on the phone in the club.
You can find one on the phone in the club.
Literally.
Yeah, you can. And people do that.
Yeah.
So being able to start up a conversation with somebody because you're romantically interested in them, there's a lot of people who don't know how to do that anymore.
Oh, now we're off. Tell me, the difference, I don't know if this is just Leso land, right? So you'll need to tell me. But the amount of women in particular who can flirt on the app or in messaging, but in person, got no game. Is this the same with dudes?
I think so.
Is it?
I think so,
Tell me more. I feel like David Attenborough.
You know what this brings me to, which is actually quite an interesting topic, something called chatfishing.
Chatfishing.
So there are men and women, of course, but there are men on dating apps who will use ChatGPT to fuel their half of the conversation.
Stop it.
No, I'm completely serious. So if you write something, they'll jump on ChatGPT, say, what's the ideal response to this?
So if I message, hey... They're going, how do I respond to that?
Yeah, you genuinely
message
might.
Message, hey, back.
Yeah, so you know what I recommend for women? So if you've said something and you think that your date has used ChatGPT to come up with a response, put what you said into ChatGPT, say, what do you think I should respond to this? And sometimes you'll see what they've said come up on ChatGPT. Seriously.
Wild.
Yeah, it's wild. AI.
So we're going to get even worse.
Well, people are using it to fuel their conversations. They're using it to get the perfect profile picture. They're using it to write their bios. It is everywhere, and it is making dating worse.
Let's wrap up with some broad advice, because people love your advice, and I think they're here for your advice, and clearly read the book and get the advice. If you're single and you don't want to be, what is your advice if you're looking for a relationship?
This might be a little controversial of me, well, for some, but I genuinely think it is to join a dating app, give it a go, and swipe and put yourself out there. Mm. Like, there's a lot of advice I can offer you about meeting people in the real world, but most relationships start on dating apps. So if you want a relationship, download an app and give it a go. I mean, people don't like them, and I understand why, but people find love on dating apps.
Absolutely. I think as well, one of the things I love in your book, and I wholeheartedly agree, if you're going to do it, do it.
Mm.
Right? If you don't feel like dating, don't date, don't go on the apps. But if you're going to do it, to some degree it's a numbers game.
Yeah.
And put your best foot forward. Like, go in a good mood. Go as though it will be potentially successful. Don't go like wedding bells, but don't go in going, oh, this is going to be... If you bring that energy to the date, that's how the date will go, right?
Yeah.
So actually do it and be thoughtful and read their profile and...
Yeah, and as terrible as dating can be, we do it because the payoff is so worth it.
Yeah.
So you might go on like 20 terrible dates and you might think, oh, God, I'm wasting my time. I've had so many boring nights out. But then when you meet that person, you go, oh, it's all worthwhile. It's actually quite nice.
Do you might get a little passion dash.
You might.
Very nice. All right, what if you're in a relationship, a long-term relationship, and you're not sure whether you should be? What advice would you give?
If you're in a long-term relationship and you're not sure you should be, I think if you're not sure you should be, that's kind of the answer in of itself. If you're not enjoying yourself, if you're not deeply in love with that person, why would you push for a relationship? Like, why would you try and create something out of nothing?
What do you think of because there's a whole industry of advice on how to keep that relationship going. You know, schedule in date nights, like do that. Oh, I can't even think of the other advice, but, you know, there's a whole industry of advice around that stuff. What do you think in terms of long-term relationships? Should it be work?
There should be effort made, but I think when it starts to become tiresome and you feel your esteem wearing down, when you feel like you've lost your identity a little bit, I think that's when it becomes too much. I mean, people talk about work, how relationships are work. You've got to put in all of this work. It's such hard work. Well, yeah, you do have to put in some work, but there's got to be a limit, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we've both seen so many people who are checking off a tick box, right? Well, I took her on date night and I bought her flowers on her birthday, and then they're like, but and why did she leave? It's like, because you didn't listen to her.
Yeah.
You didn't actually show any interest. You're actually ticking off a kind of cultural checklist rather than being present. What about if you go, I'm not doing any of this stuff again. I want to be single. I am not ready to mingle.
More power to you.
More power to you. No advice needed.
No advice needed. I mean, like, I've written this book about dating, but I'm very comfortable single on my own, and I think that that's a better, like, I prefer being single to dating. I love dating. Dating is a lot of fun, but being single is really fulfilling as well.
Well, ironically, can we end on that? I would like to know the thing that you love most about being single.
Oh, freedom. Freedom, being able to wake up on the weekend doing whatever I want to do, not having to think about someone else. When I think about what to have for dinner, I can have whatever I like. I can do anything I feel. It's just an amazing sense of freedom, only having to take care of yourself. It's wonderful. And I know being in a relationship can be wonderful too. You have companionship. Financially, it's easier. I mean, I totally get it and I understand it. But just being able to be free is just a wonderful feeling.
Thank you. So I've got like a trillion other questions, but you're going to have to read the book. Everyone, please put your hands together for Alita Bryden, How to Date Like a Dangerous Woman.
solid advice if you're dating, if you're in a relationship or happily single. Big ideas going all big feels today at the Brimbank Writers and Readers Festival in Naarm, Melbourne, with Alita Bryden. She's founder of the super popular Bad Dates of Melbourne social media accounts. Her new book is called How to Date Like a Dangerous Woman. And she was speaking with Nellie Thomas, comedian and host of the Single Life of Us and Dear Nellie podcasts. Don't forget, you can catch up on or share Big Ideas episodes with your friends. Now, there's a hot date idea via our website on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts. Yet bringing you big thinkers and daters at the best live events. I'm Natasha Mitchell and I will catch you next time.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.